This is The Shakeout.
Showing some close reach towards the finish line.
He might do it. Look at that guy. Look at Plant Zero.
Oh, my God. There's Salazar. Can he have enough? Salazar kicking.
This has to be the greatest race of his life.
Welcome to the Alexis on Fire t-shirt episode. My name is Michael Doyle, and I am the editor of Canadian Running Magazine. And failing to contain herself is web editor Sinead Mulhern.
Well, hi, Michael.
Hi, Sinead.
And you called me out on that one.
You like that?
That was true. Yeah.
And Tim Hubes, our staff writer.
Hello.
Hello, Tim.
Hi.
We are laughing because Sinead just admitted that she had Alexis on Fire CDs. CDs?
Yeah. Plural. Yeah.
Plural.
There were only two. Not helping my case.
Anyway, you will understand the reference, the name of this podcast if you listen on in the first segment. On this week's show, first we talk to decathlete Kevin No, who posted pretty much a daily vlog, and in one of his most recent videos he posted to YouTube, he did something completely insane which caught our eye and we did a story on it. He wore 100 t-shirts at the same time while competing in a decathlon in 1 hour. It's completely insane. The video was amazing, and Kevin was great to talk to about it. He was a great sport. And in our second segment, we're going to talk about a crazy week in running. We're going to each share our favorite stories that are on the Canadian Running website this week. All kinds of great stuff. Kevin No of Ottawa is a 23-year-old decathlete and vlogger. This week, he posted a crazy video, one of our favorite videos we've seen in a long time.
Definitely.
Where he wore 100 t-shirts and did a decathlon in 1 hour. We talked to Kevin from Ottawa.
Thanks for being on the show today, Kevin.
You're welcome. Happy to be here.
So recently you did a decathlon, which is basically 10 events over a two-day span, but you did kind of a condensed version with an interesting twist. You did it with 100 t-shirts. Tell me where you were inspired to do this with 100 t-shirts on.
So last year on YouTube, which is where I hang out a lot, there was kind of a trend going around and everyone was putting on 100 t-shirts and just kind of taking the challenge. And it was one video in particular by a YouTuber called H3H3. He put on 100 t-shirts and just went shopping at the grocery store. I honestly laughed out loud so hard. And it inspired me to do something even worse. That's kind of just what made me want to do it. And then I had the idea of doing a decathlon with something dumb and kind of just like mix the two together, and it ended up being awesome, a ton of fun, and yeah, that's kind of where the idea came from.
It's funny because we were laughing out loud the entire time watching you on the track just suffering through it, but one of the questions that I had in the back of my mind the entire time was like, where did you get all of the t-shirts?
So I did a quick purge of like all my old t-shirts. As you saw, if you noticed, there's like some old
Alexis on Fire t-shirts.
Stuff when I was in, yeah, I had an Alexis on Fire t-shirt. Yeah, I was a big fan back in the day. I mean, I had the shirts just kind of sitting in my closet at home. I unpacked them from all like the zipper bags, and I was like, okay, I have like 70 of them. So I had a ton, but I needed to go buy a few more. So because I've never owned an extra large or extra, extra large t-shirt, so I had to go to Value Village and pick up a few XXLs so it actually fit. Once you get up to like 80 t-shirts, it starts to get really tight. And just wearing XLs, so you have to get the big ones.
So towards the start of the video, there's a really cool time lapse you do where you show like yourself putting on the 100 t-shirts, and you just mentioned that things start to get pretty tight. At like 80 t-shirts, do you start thinking to yourself, this is a really bad idea? Maybe this is kind of dangerous. I'm kind of freaking out. Like, I'd get claustrophobic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought about that after the whole thing. I tried to keep it out of my mind. I tried to go like, okay, this is going to go great. This is going to be awesome. Honestly, didn't have any concern. And then, I mean, I showed my my girlfriend the video, and I showed my mother the video as well.
Oh, man.
And both of them were like, what? What if you would, like, choke? Could you breathe?
Right.
I was like, you know what? I didn't really think about it. Just kind of did it.
And it was like,
so, you know, in hindsight, not awesome, but it was fun.
And it was literally a big weight on your shoulders, right? It was how heavy was 100 t-shirts?
It was actually, so I weighed the t-shirts before I actually did it. It was 50 pounds of t-shirt.
Whoa.
So it's nuts. So with 50 pounds, what's the hardest event to do?
Definitely the 15.
So the 1500 meters is the
I'm already bad at it.
why don't you walk us through that 1500 meters? I mean, we saw the video, but I would like to hear about it from your perspective again.
Yeah, definitely. So started off at a decent pace, got through, Tolu and Matt made their predictions, which are the two guys who were with me. They made their predictions saying I go about 2 minutes per lap, and I stayed on pace for the first one, but after 800, I was going to in 440. wasn't so hot, and I was kind of looking at both of them like, guys, what's going on here? Like, I don't know if I can do this. This is seriously hard, because you start to feel the t-shirts on your chest, and you're like, I can't breathe. I think it was at about 1200 when my back started spazzing out. Because you're kind of like stuck in a hunched over position. Really uncomfortable. Really uncomfortable. Made it through, though. They pushed me through. I thought I was going to die, but they jogged with me, and it made it a lot easier.
So what was the what was your end time for the 1500 meters?
The final time was 9:16.
Yeah. And how fast do you normally run the 1500? I mean, you say it's sort of one of your weaker events, but what do you normally run it at?
So my PB is 5:05.99.
Right.
Not great either.
No, but that's...
But, I mean, for a decathlete, like, you have to balance yourself so much for all the other events that, I mean, you do have your shortcomings.
Yeah, why don't you describe to us a little bit, just for listeners who are more casual track and field fans or maybe more into road running, like, you know, there are 10 events. Kind of describe to us what the decathlon is like.
So the decathlon it's really interesting because with distance running, and I know a lot of your listeners are long distance runners, and it's interesting because it is a long event. It's actually 2 full days of competition, and you never really get out of this competition zone. It's nice to, in comparison, I guess, it's like when you start your race, you have a race plan, and it's the same idea with decathlon. You have a decathlon plan. You have set out goals, and you set out ideas or what you want to do throughout the decathlon. And it's starting on day one, you get the first 5 events that you saw in the video, and you do those, and then you do the next 5 on the next day, and you still have to stay mentally in it. I guess it could be compared to, I think, to adventure racing. Is it where they actually do running over quite a few days?
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so it's kind of like stretching out, and it's really cool. It's hard, though. It's really hard to train for.
So this year we've seen the Blue Jeans Mile. In the past years, we've seen the Beer Mile, a bunch of like people running in suits. Is certain challenges with 100 t-shirts, do you think, actually going to become a thing kind of in track and field as like kind of like a side,
I really like
a side thing?
Yeah. I really like how at the bottom of the article, Shanid made a comment saying like, is it going to catch on? And I mean, it would be awesome if it caught on. It would be really cool if it caught on as a fad, but like, it's kind of hard to do. You have to have 100 t-shirts and like 3 people to help you. Whereas if you're doing a beer mile or a jean mile or a suit mile, I've never heard of that one. You kind of just throw on a pair of jeans or a suit or whatever it is and go for it. It's a lot easier to do those. With 100 t-shirts, you need some friends to help you, or you're going to freak out once you finish.
So on that whole once you finish thing, how'd you get the t-shirts off? Did you have to cut them off?
Yeah. So at the end of the video, there's like a short clip of Matt cutting them off, and he's like pretending to stab them with his scissors and stuff. Yeah, no, it was tough. He the first like 10 t-shirts, he's like, no, I'll just rip them off. Don't worry. I'm like, man, no, I can't feel my arms. Just get the scissors. So yeah, I got him. You had to cut them off, and then by the last, I don't know, like 20 or 30 t-shirts, you could just rip them off normally.
At the end of the race, I assume most decathlons, you kind of were on the ground, and your buddies kind of teased you a bit with like some water and stuff. How, I guess, hard was it? Were you even able to get up once you were on the ground with 100 t-shirts on?
No. No. So in long jump, I cut out this clip, but when we were doing long jump at the start, it was hard to get out of the pit, and Matt kept pushing me over as I was trying to get up. So I wasn't any help, and especially at the end, they didn't push me over. They just kind of waterboarded me instead.
Oh, great! Good friends.
It was hilarious watching the video afterwards, and I knew it was going to be good. So
what?
I'm happy they pushed me around.
What event, I guess, was the easiest to do? Was it like the shot put? Like, considering you had like a little bit of like a an area to rest it on or something.
Yeah, I guess shot put was fairly decent, but javelin was hard. No, it was definitely discus. Discus was definitely the easiest, I think. Just because it kind of like held your arms straight out naturally. Like, okay, cool. The only, you know, it's kind of hard to finish the throw because you can't really rip the arm around, but put your arms in a decent position. It wasn't bad. So I'd say discus definitely was the easiest.
I'm kind of curious about knowing a little bit more about your mom's reaction. Like, what did she say when she saw the video? Did she know that you were doing this ahead of time?
Yes. she kind of knew. She knew I was grabbing all the t-shirts out of the house, and she was like, what are you doing with those? And I was like, nothing, don't worry about it. And whenever I did the video and I came home, I was like, I made the video and you should watch it. And she's like, I'm not going to watch that. I know what you did. I was like, okay. So they took her 3 days, and I was like, you gotta watch this thing, like, it's getting pretty big, you gotta watch it. And sure enough, she watched it. She shook her head the whole time, had a few laughs, but definitely she's concerned. She was concerned.
So you vlog on a really very regular basis, maybe even daily, if I'm not mistaken. So tell us a little bit about that community, about how you got into it, about that growing community, both inside and outside of running. I mean, we've talked to a few people now that keep up a pretty regular vlog.
You guys have shared quite a few videos from Casey Neistat, which I've noticed. And then that was one of the first vloggers that I started watching not too long ago. It was about, I guess, August of last year. And it kind of inspired me to get into the community. And I knew I was good at one thing. Well, I was in the community for one thing, and that was track and field. I could have made a regular vlog or just done my blogging with my daily life, but I knew track and field was a good niche to get into because there's no track and field vloggers. And since then, it's gained a lot of traction. And I try to upload daily with the, I guess, Casey Neistat formula, but YouTube changes all the time. So I took 2 months off, which is, I mean, not recommended, but it was nice to have a little vacation from the vlog. It's tough uploading every day. But I'm getting back into it right now, and I'm uploading every day and meeting lots of people. I've met so many good people through this vlog. Apparently Damian Warner watches them. I met him at Nationals. I thought that was mind-blowing.
So now he's seen you try decathlon in 100 t-shirts, probably.
Oh, definitely. He shared the video from Tracky.
Oh, my God.
So just as a follow-up to that, I mean, you make it look pretty, in terms of the actual construction of the video, like it's pretty slick, you know, like you've obviously put a lot of time into it. Like how many minutes or hours of footage did you shoot for that? And how long did it take you to edit that whole thing together just for that, the 100 t-shirts vlog?
Well, I have a lot of experience as of the last year with editing. So I tend to be fairly quick. That video in particular probably took maybe 4 hours tops. But like that's I put a lot of time into that one. Like most of my edits I can get done in an hour or two.
Oh wow. Okay. That's
sometimes really half an hour if I'm really pumping them out.
Impressive.
Yeah. You get good at it when you do one every day.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
what else can we expect from your YouTube channel, One Track Mind, in the next few months or in the next year?
Well, yeah, I hope to grow it a lot. I hope to upload a lot. I hope to meet a ton of new people. I've made some good connections over the year, and I hope to do some videos with some notable decathletes, hopefully other athletes as well. I like to make connections, and I want to expand it to more than just my blogging of, I don't know, the daily sort of stuff, just the training. I also want to start including some sort of like product reviews and stuff like that, kind of expand it, get some more people watching. I think I can grow, and I really would like to grow, and I'd love to serve the community, keep them happy. I also love making these viral videos, like the 100 T-shirt one. Want to do more in the future like this. They're just a lot harder to do than just a regular vlog.
Well, thanks again for joining us today, Kevin. We'll link the video in the show notes for everyone to watch. I think it already has like 1,600 views, and that's probably a lagged count. So
yeah.
All the best with the decathlon stuff in the next bit.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me on. One last thing. Just before this morning, I was editing a video and I'm releasing it today. I call out you, Tim. I say, hey, Tim, Canadian Running, because it's from Nationals. I haven't released that yet. And I say, maybe we should do something. And sure enough, here I am today on your podcast. Awesome.
That's fantastic.
That's awesome.
Well, yeah, thanks again.
Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys.
And now our second segment. We're going to do a roundtable discussion about our favorite stories from the week in running. Tim, let's start off with last week's guest, Alyssa Saint-Laurent, who was in Chamonix, France, doing a little run around the Alps called the Ultra Trail du Mont Blanc. How did she do?
Amazing result. She came sixth overall among 2,500 runners. She had a really strong race throughout. On the podcast last week, she didn't really say how fast or what place she wanted to come in, but her goal was really hopeful, I think, and she pulled through and had a really badass result. So like you said, it was just under 170 kilometers around Mont Blanc, the tallest mountain in the Alps, and through snow, through basically everything. I think they had to alter the course slightly because at high altitudes the snow is getting pretty bad. More than 24 hours of running, just a crazy result from one of Canada's best ultra runners.
Yeah, and she took over Instagram for the weekend, which was super cool. Yeah. Like, did
she
a really
cool
good
shots.
Job. Yeah, beautiful stuff. Yeah.
She's amazing.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun watching her. The UTMB this year was great.
Definitely.
So Sinead, what do you got for us?
Well, this week we we've got a series called Boston or Bust. So that's actually coming to a close pretty soon. The premise of it is this woman who reached out to me earlier in the summer who gives us an update every week or so. She's aiming to get her BQ before she wants to become a mother in the near future. So she's aiming to get her BQ at the Erie Marathon. So like she's got a few days down to the wire. And she's writing the story about how this is a goal that she really wants to achieve before she starts a family. And when she was sort of planning out when she wanted to do that, she realized that the 2018 Boston Marathon would be her big race. So I've got my fingers crossed for her. It's a few days now, and it's just kind of interesting to see like everyone comes at running from a different angle. They have different priorities, different phases in life. So it's nice to see someone who has this goal, and I really have enjoyed working with her over the summer.
And Lake Erie, of course, is sort of the ultimate last chance for Boston romance, because it is the day before the 2018 registration opens.
Yeah.
The registration opens 10 o'clock in the morning, I want to say, Eastern time. I might be wrong on that. on Monday. So yeah, we're recording on Friday. So it'll be after this weekend coming up. And that's it. I mean, that's the cutoff is Sunday. So that is her last opportunity to qualify. It's been fun following really her journey. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's not like she'll probably continue running after. And it's not that she couldn't run a Boston later, but this is two goals that she really wanted for herself. So it's going to be really exciting to see if she can get the BQ and then sign up for Boston basically the next day.
So what's her name?
Lindsay. Yeah. Lindsay McAdam.
So we can
link to some.
We can all
posts.
Live track her on Sunday. Cheer her on. Poor Lindsay. And do you know what her BQ time is?
She's going for 3:30, under 3:30.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Well, good luck to Lindsay.
Yeah.
Tim, what else you got?
So this one comes from Canadian Callum Neff in Houston, Texas. He lives in, he's from Calgary. He resides in Katy, which is just west of Houston, which was recently hit quite badly by Hurricane Harvey. Severe flooding everywhere. He was fortunate enough to have a truck as well as a raft. So he went out with a local trail running group called Trail Racing Over Texas in the initial stages of the flooding to help someone that the community knew within the running community. And from there, he has helped lead rescue efforts for upwards of, he told me in an email that he and his crew have helped rescue 600 people as well as provide assistance to upwards of 200 people per day. And that was over a 5 to 10 day span. So big kudos to Callum Neff, doing great work down there in Texas, helping out the community. People might know him for holding the half marathon and marathon world record for running with a stroller, which he did with two of his daughters. So they're both also world record holders, which is kind of cool. He did the marathon last fall in Toronto. So yeah, again, big ups to Cal Neff for being a big part of the community.
Yeah, that's an incredible story. The photos that he's taken sort of snapped on the fly, I guess, with his phone of the devastation there and of the amazing work that community of runners and of just people bonding together to help each other is pretty incredible. It was weird. Last weekend, Tim and I were just sort of having a back and forth, and we both realized, hey, like, Callum Neff's in the Houston area.
Yeah.
I wonder how he's doing. And we reached out to him, and he's like, well,
this is what I'm doing.
I have been really busy. And I think that's just anybody who's got any sort of ability to help, to contribute to the aid effort there, is just jumping in and doing it. So
yeah, that was a really heartwarming one to read, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, he said it escalated from helping a dozen people on a raft through the night in nonstop rain to eventually helping like local police, even the army, kind of, because he just knew the area so well, and he had maps of the area that he was able to help these various forces rescue people out of their homes and then bring them back in once the flooding and water levels subsided.
Yeah, we're going to keep track of that story, and we'll be, we told Callum that we'd touch base with him after things sort of calmed down a little bit, and sort of tell that story long-term with him as well. Sinead, Gary Robbins, who, friend of the show.
Always popular dude as yes. well.
he's taking a star turn in documentary.
Yes.
And he and the ginger runner, Ethan Newberry, who made the film, are taking it on tour. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So it's, if you were a fan of the other Barkley doc, we've got a second one coming. So he's, this one follows his two attempts at the Barkley. And he's going to be going on tour around Canada and the U.S. He's hitting up Edmonton, Calgary, North Vancouver actually sold out pretty much immediately, and Toronto. So he's going to be touring around, having screenings. It's definitely something that I'm really looking forward to seeing this documentary.
And we should say for our American listeners, it will also be touring all sorts of places in the U.S. as well.
Yes.
And we were back and forth with Gary today via email, and basically throughout the day, the updates were that like every Canadian city, I think, has sold out now.
Oh wow!
I think so.
That doesn't
very close
me.
To selling out.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's bad news if you're in Canada, but I feel like the popularity of this thing is really going to take hold and pick up, and I imagine it will end up being, you know, streamable or downloadable.
Oh, for sure. Hopefully.
On some sort of service of some kind in the near future. And hopefully you got tickets for it. We're going to be there October 22nd in Toronto. The three of us are going to go watch the film. And
I can't wait. It's going to be cool having this one narrative that takes us through the two attempts and really what happens when you go to the Barclay and how it breaks you down. And he has confirmed that he's going back for a third attempt,
which is nuts.
I don't know how, after the first one, I was like, how are you even confirming that you're gonna go for round two?
And then
three times, I can't really,
he's a man
that.
Possessed. He has to finish it. The documentary is appropriately titled Where Dreams Go to Die, Gary Robbins and the Barclay Marathons. It, like, we've there's a, I think, about a 9 or 10 minute teaser clip that we've posted online on our site, as well as the trailer. And they're both super compelling, really nicely shot, really like slickly edited. Ethan Newberry, the guy who directed the documentary, who is quite a well-known personality in the running scene. Mm-hmm. People know him as Ginger Runner.
Mm-hmm.
He has done an amazing job with this, and it looks great. And mm-hmm. I think, I can't confirm this yet, but rumor has it that we'll have them on the podcast.
Nice.
At
that'll
some
be,
point in maybe
fun.
Early October to talk about the making of this.
This is just a rumor.
This is a rumor right
spread
now.
Spread by Michael.
I can't confirm or deny what I just said.
That'll be great.
Have we hit peak Barclay? Just when we think we've hit peak Barclay, last year happened, and then
I know
now a documentary specifically on the last two attempts.
I'm psyched. Yeah. I'm psyched for 2018. Yeah. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah.
I believe in Gary Robbins. I think he's going to get this done. Everyone wants to get him to
I know,
get it done. It's like,
I know. Even Laz is like, you can tell that he's just like, come on.
And this is the man that enjoys watching suffering. So, yeah.
You'll probably enjoy watching the film then, Laz Lake.
I wonder, so. Tim and I were wondering if he's going to show up to any of the screenings. That
well,
would be
there
cool.
is a screening in Nashville, Tennessee.
I know.
I wonder.
I picture him only walking around with like the trench coat and the hat. Like that's the way he dresses every day in my mind.
Yeah, of course. Of course you wear an oil leather slicker or whatever.
Like it'd be
you go
weird if
hat.
He showed up in like a windbreaker and just like a baseball cap. Like that would be weird.
That's not he even sleeps in that like leather tilly hat.
Of course.
Yeah. Tim, speaking of attire, we caught online today a photo from a Kenyan site of Eliud Kipchoge wearing an unusual shirt.
He was wearing a Berlin WR shirt, which means Berlin World Record, referencing, unless it means something else, but considering the Berlin Marathon is coming up, and he's run two minutes flat, 25 seconds unofficially in a marathon distance. He's going for the 2 hours to 57 mark, and he's rocking this apparel around like he's already done it. So
that's confidence.
I guess I don't know where those shirts will go if he doesn't do it. Maybe recycled for future years if he at some point in the future attempts to get the record. But I don't know. This is going to be, it's going to be a huge race on the men's side. Bekele versus Kipsang versus Kipchoge. Basically the three, I guess, biggest marathoners in the world right now.
I am so psyched for the fall racing calendar. We've got Berlin up first, which, like, as you just described, is maybe on the men's side, maybe the greatest race.
It's in like two
ever.
Weeks too.
Oh, and it's going to be such a throwdown. And like, it's like 50-50 the world record will go down, I would say, even more so. I would say I'd bet on the world record going down in that race as long as the weather's fine. And then you got Chicago, which should be a lot of fun. Galen Rupp and Jordan Hesse are both running, and I think they both have a good shot at winning, which is kind of interesting. And in Toronto, so this is a story I wrote this week. Well, actually, I didn't write. I edited it. Paul Gaines contributed it to us. A story I was just really excited about this week, which was an announcement that the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon made that they are bringing in probably the best runner, the best marathon runner that Canada has ever seen to run a marathon. Mm-hmm. Dixon Chumba, who's a 204 guy, total star. And the Canadian soil all-comers record is definitely in danger with this guy coming to Toronto. So I'm excited
about
that.
That'll be cool. Yeah. I can't wait to just watch that unfold over the big screen.
He's the most talented guy Toronto's ever brought in. He is like a different echelon. He's won Chicago. He's won Tokyo. The guy's a big deal.
What do you think he's going to run?
I think he's going to run 206.05
or something
like that. Yeah. Yeah. I actually just got an email forwarded to me today from his coach breaking down the last 10 days of the guy's workouts.
And oh, cool.
They are nuts. Like, it's just the guy is in good shape. So.
And he'll win, what, 90,000 if he breaks both the course record and all-comers record?
I don't know if they give you both, but the course record is 40K. The all-comers Canadian soil record, which is currently sitting at 206.54, I think, is a $50,000 payout. And then, of course, there's $25,000 for winning the race. And I imagine there was probably an incentive for him to come to Toronto as well. So, you know, I mean, I think it's a comparable payday for a guy like Chumba to come to Toronto, which is exciting and important for a race like Toronto to do, to get top level stars.
Mm-hmm. That'll be fun.
Sinead, the biggest story that we had this week by far was just like
so crazy.
Strange. Tell us what happened at the Disneyland 10K.
So this woman stole somebody else's bib, ran the race, was met by police officers at the finish line after a group of runners looked into her past and found out that she has been stealing other people's bibs as sort of like an ongoing thing, as a habit. So basically, she was found out. She just takes other runners' bibs at Disney events. And so she was greeted by security the second she crossed the finish line.
So hold up. So she committed fraud. Like, she didn't like physically steal a bib from another person. She impersonated someone.
Yes.
And stole their bib and like claimed it as her own.
Yes.
And then took it.
And then so like,
how did she do that? What about ID? Like,
I don't recall ever being
really
asked for ID. Maybe at a major marathon, but.
Oh, they will at Disney from here on in, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I can't believe they don't.
And it's crazy because she's got a different woman's name on. So Marathon Investigation is the site that it was published on.
This is a Marathon Investigation.
So this is the guy who found her out. But it's funny because she's got a different person's name on like every single bib. And she's wearing costumes, like she's dressed as Peter Pan in one of them. It's like, so it's just so ridiculous. Like, it's so weird.
So strange.
She was also, so she was escorted to her car, and then they found out that she had the wheelchair.
This is a weird wrinkle.
So she was also been found out to be using the handicap parking, like abusing that parking.
Like she's like
permit
fake,
as
she
well.
Has like a fake like disabilities permit.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I needless to say, she'll never be running a Disney event.
Hopefully not.
Well, yes, hopefully not. Yeah. That's incredible. How bizarre. We have two stories. We had the initial story, the initial report, and Mr. Derek Murphy, Mr. Marathon Investigation, did like a full how I caught the Disney thief feature on his website. And
yes,
you have done a nice job kind of unpacking how he did that and breaking that down, which is also up on our site as well.
Yeah. So Tim did the initial story on the weekend where it was found out that this woman has just been, you know, doing this as a routine. And now this Derek Murphy man, who kind of has taken it upon himself to be the whistleblower for all cheaters and like the recreational
vigilante.
Yeah.
He's meting out vigilante justice.
Nothing gets past him.
Nothing does. And to his credit in this, I mean, this is strange. I mean, I assume that this person probably was gaining a thrill from deceiving races and from actually committing this act of fraud and theft,
mm-hmm.
as well as just enjoying. It's like a weird combination of enjoying scamming people and stealing and also running in costumes at Disney races.
And now I get to dress up as Peter Pan.
It's a weird, weird psychology.
Well, yeah, it was weird because the way these Disney races work is there's a race every day, usually for 3 days. So she did the 5K on Thursday legitimately with her own bib. And then...
Like, why?
Sorry. The 5K she did with someone else's bib, and then the 10K she did legitimately, and then like that's how they found her. So she was entered in the race, but she also stole a bib to do a previous race.
It was like one of the events sold out, and she wasn't able, and she wanted to do two. I don't get it.
I'm not sure.
So I
guess you're not supposed to understand the psychology of of someone who is clearly not well. That's my assumption, at least. This person's not doing okay.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of people commenting that the races are expensive, so it might have been, she wanted to get a free ride for one of them. But again, that's just people commenting.
That's a complicated free ride. You can just jump in and bandit the thing, right?
True.
Although
I guess
at Disneyland, it's maybe under a lot more security, perhaps, because it's a closed park,
right? In that regard.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that was strange. Weird. That was weird. Let's move on to recommendations. Tim, what's your recommendation this week?
I'm going to give a shout out to the New Balance 1080 version 7 Fresh Foam. Solid neutral cushion, lightweight trainer that I ran probably 150K in like earlier this year when the shoe originally came out. And then when our kind of shoe, our spring shoe and summer shoe kind of collection came in, I just got bogged down running and other stuff, testing that out. And then I ran through all those, destroyed them. And now I'm back with the 1080 version 7 because they only had a few hundred K on them. I get back into them and they're already broken in nicely. And I've been putting about 2 weeks of solid mileage kind of in prep for Maritime Race Weekend, which
nice.
Is coming up.
Oh, yeah.
We're all going.
Yeah. So
that's coming up next weekend.
So yeah, just putting finishing touches on my speed, I guess.
I'm doomed.
Good for you. That makes one of us.
Yeah, that's correct. Meanwhile, I ran 6K of my workout last night and bailed because I've just had this awful cold. So I,
it's been ongoing for a while.
Yeah, I'm sounding extra nasal and extra NPR-ish today. Sinead, what is your recommendation this week?
Okay, well... I guess it's on time for back to school, early September. A lot of kids, elementary school, high school, university. My recommendation is to join the cross country team if you haven't thought of doing so before, or if you need a new goal or something to just kind of shake up your student schedule. Around the time where I was listening to my Alexis on Fire CDs, which you find hilarious, I joined the cross country team, and I really appreciated having that through my high school years. When I went to university, we didn't have a team, but I would just say to students who kind of, you know, maybe want to get a fresh start at school, it's definitely something I would recommend.
And for all of us old folks over 30, which is only me in this room, and if you live in Ontario, and maybe British Columbia as well, and perhaps other parts of Canada, but certainly in Southern Ontario, there is an amazing Masters cross-country circuit in Southern Ontario that that I highly recommend. Hmm. I do it every year. They're some of the best races I do. Cross country is amazing.
Yeah.
Cross country isn't just for the kids.
It's so fun to go out and get muddy and run through the leaves and I don't know.
Yeah,
it's
find just a cross country race experience. And run it. It doesn't matter how old you are or if you've never done one before or if it's been 10, 15, 20, 30 years since you've run one. You owe it to yourself. Go hurt yourself in a cross country race because it's painful. My recommendation this week would be it's an ode to a brand. I have had a Arc'teryx jacket for years. I had this winter Gore-Tex Arc'teryx jacket, and I think it's probably almost 15 years old. And the zipper broke. And I thought, oh no, the zipper broke. It's about 12. I'm like, it's 12 years old. It's time to let the Arc'teryx jacket go. I'll just buy a new one. I've got good wear out of it. And then someone said to me, no, Arc'teryx stands by their products. And I was like, this is a really old jacket. I'm like, no.
It's over a decade old though.
And they're like, bring it into an Arc'teryx store or mail it in with a note and they'll take a look at it. And I was like, okay. So I brought it into, there's an Arc'teryx store in Toronto. So I brought it in and they said, okay, yeah, no, we'll send it out. And someone will email you in a week or two and let you know what the status of it is. I get an email about a week later. Person says, yes, the zipper is broken and we would repair that zipper under warranty.
What?
Exactly. I'm like, okay.
It's 12 years old.
But we also noticed that the Gore-Tex membrane has totally worn out and like your jacket's kind of toast. Hmm. So here's a link to the exact same jacket you currently have, but the new version that we now make that's way better. Pick a color and tell us your size and we will send you a new jacket.
What?
Yep.
For free.
For free.
Okay, so I'm going to get an Arc'teryx outfit right now.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just going to wear it for the rest of my life.
Every
because
day.
Because I can update it 10 years from now.
Head to toe in Gore-Tex.
When I'm in my mid-30s.
There you go. Thanks for rubbing that in. Yes. So I thought I'd give a shout out to the brand. I think, you know, they don't need me to trumpet the fact that they are an amazing company that make the highest caliber outdoor gear in the world. They're a North Vancouver brand. I have been to their head office. I've gone through a tour of like all their design areas. I met the woman who made the running jacket that I adore. It was kind of weird. It was like a weird moment. Like it was like a fanboy. I'm like, oh, you made my jacket.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It was strange. I like shook her hand. I'm like, nice to meet you.
You were like totally a fan. Yeah. Situation. Well,
can you sign my Norvan running jacket?
Did you actually though?
No.
Okay. Just checking.
That would have been weird because it's hard to sign Gore-Tex. But I did not use my position at the magazine in any way. I think I even used my personal email account when I sent the jacket in, and it was extraordinary. Extraordinary customer service. They stand by their products, at least they have with me. I was super impressed by it. They went above and beyond. I now have a brand new Arc'teryx jacket that I'm going to wear the hell out of for the next 10 to 12 years, and I'm sure it will last that long. I'm super psyched.
That's really cool.
Very cool. And they make good running stuff. And they've got a new running shoe coming out, which looks really interesting.
Cool.
A new trail shoe. We will actually have more on that in the November issue of the magazine. Look at that magazine tie-in. All right. Thank you so much, guys. Next week, we're on the road. Hopefully, we'll be able to bring you our second on-the-road mobile podcast.
Oh, yeah, it will be our second. First was Boston.
First was Boston. Second, this one will be out in the Maritimes, Maritime Race Weekend. Oh, Tim's giving me the three. It's our third. Tim and I went to Ottawa. That's right. Sorry. I'm sorry, Tim. That's right. We recorded one episode from an Airbnb, which was a lot of fun, and that was a good episode.
Yep, it was.
All right, gang. Thanks very much.
Cool. Thanks.
Thank you.
Make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and Apple Podcast, and we're also now available on Stitcher and Google Play. Make sure to follow our Facebook page at facebook.com/theshakeoutpodcast and on Twitter @shakeoutpodcast and Instagram @shakeoutpodcast.